Hi, everyone.
Hey.
Hi there. So just for recording purposes, this is the clean call for January the 19th in 2016. So welcome, everyone. And are there any announcements to start our call today?
I'll go first. This is Kristen Poppleton with Climate Generation. And our Summer Institute for Climate Change Education 2016 is open for registration. And we'd love to get folks from all over the country. The focus this year is our newest climate change curriculum resource, which uses next generation science standards as a framework. So the resource is aligned with middle school performance expectations. And so we're especially hoping to get folks from states that are adopting or districts that are adopting next-gen science standards. 4 days, it's $150, and there's on-site lodging available. It's at McAllister College in St. Paul.
Good. So, Lynn, are you still on?
Hi, this is Lynn. I just had to unmute my phone. I'm going to be driving my husband in just a second, but I'm on, and I did send out a note in response to Mark's excellent article on education about my website. I hope you guys will take a look at that email and visit my site, which is www.ourcommonearth.org. And it is for the general public, but includes a lot of different perspectives, including conservatives in business, liberals, faith-based, youth, environmental justice, and also the psychological reasons behind denial. And also includes actions people can take at the local level and organizations to affiliate with. So I'd love any feedback that anyone can give me on how I disseminate this website.
That's great. Super, Lynn.
Thank
so
you.
Glad to do that. Do you realize that Mark was part of sort of the original group that started this whole enterprise? So Mark has been a longtime member of this, but he now lives in Hungary, so he's a little bit... The time shift is quite enormous for him. I'm still hoping that we can get him to do a presentation sometime in the future. We may have to shift times or something on this side, but he's in Hungary these days. So Mark has been part of this, and he has been working with this idea for several years, and it's kind of been refined. Certainly, it's mostly his work, but certainly I think we've all kind of rubbed it a little bit to polish it up. So
yes.
It's great. It in this form, and I'm glad it met with your approval too.
Oh yes, and I'm new to the organization, so I didn't know that history, and I'm really glad you shared it with me. How do I find out more? Do I go to the website to find out more about the history of the organization?
And I must admit, there's not a whole lot there. We haven't really, and quite frankly, we don't even keep it up very much. The only thing that
I see
I do is just work on the schedule. So that's
okay.
The only thing that really gets changed. But we will be doing, I think Tamara's planning in something like in April or May, something like that. We're going to do the results of the survey. We did a survey of certainly our own members, but even beyond that, to just see what people are working on. And we are planning to do sort of talk about those results. I think she said something like by April or May, something like that.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Great.
Yeah, and at the time where we sort of, do a little bit of history. And, we've been around almost now 8 years. And there are a few of us in there pretty much from the beginning. And and so, it's been a pretty active group. And as you probably know, we've certainly been doing a whole lot of stuff on climate literacy, and some of the issues you're just talking about in terms of your website, those are extraordinarily important to us in terms of the communication. It's what do we communicate and how do we communicate it? And we've had a few folks who are very much in that communication side obviously folks who are doing like the Yale surveys and I think Janet's Swim, if I remember her last name, from the American Psychological Association. They had done a review on sort of the psychological components of that. So there's a if you actually go back on our list of telecons,
yes,
most of those talks are still there. We, you know,
okay,
if we read them, they're still there. And so you can go back about 5 years, I think. And I know Janice.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so there's quite a resource of material there. There's a lot of slides, too, of presentations that have been done over the years. And that's the easy way of doing it. And if you want to listen to the verbal presentation, those audio recordings are also there, too. So that's another
great
hint, folks.
Thank
Kristen
you.
Knows about this. And but we're always eager to have you know, new people join us, and it's always hard to catch up when, you know, especially with it's like the, you know, the family or the, you know, the business gatherings that have been going on for years, and the new person comes in and they just like don't know all the history. So
yeah.
So it's I think it's really important to sort of catch people up and absolutely make clear that you're welcome and eager to hear.
Thank you.
You know, I hope sometime, maybe, you know, once you're feeling, you know, get a sense of the crowd that you'd be interested in doing a presentation for us so we can hear a little bit more about the site.
Thank you. All right. I will definitely look at the telecoms. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's all there.
Great.
Any other announcements? Quiet. So I will... The only thing I can mention is we've had kind of a slow start to our winter season, but starting in February, we have 3 weeks of presentations coming up. So there will be one, a theme that we've played with, sort of come up on some of the calls, and that's looking for solution-based resources. And Reb Anderson from the Alliance for Climate Education, a couple of other folks, are going to talk and basically do a solicitation for folks that are have developed resources that are mostly focused on solutions. So that's coming up on the 2nd. The 9th, David Herring is going to talk a little bit about the Climate Resilience Toolkit. And on the 16th, people may remember from, I guess it's about a year and a half ago, maybe it's only a year, is when the release of the third report of the National Climate Assessment, and a number of us were involved in looking at the educational components, the educational uses of that assessment that's actually required by international treaty. And Emily Claude was part of sort of helping us understand what was going on there. She's the engagement and outreach lead for that project. And she's going to bring us up to date on the fourth assessment, which I think happens every 10 years or every 5 years, something like that. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on in between. So she's got some special reports she wants to talk a little bit about and what the process is so that, of course, we can be engaged in all of that stuff. So Emily's presentation is coming up on the 16th of February. So those three all back-to-back, they're coming up in the next couple of weeks. So next week's are the last informal discussions for a little while. So there's coming attractions. So did that spark any other announcements? Okay. It's a quiet crowd today. Any sort of pressing topics do we want to actually carry on, maybe even talk about Mark's presentation or a little piece that he sent out today?
Scott, this is Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Hey, how are you? And by the way, it's every 4 years, the National Climate Assessment on the screen.
I said 10, and I said, I don't think it's 10. Okay, every 4 years.
No, it's every four.
And it's only a year ago did that.
What's that?
The third one came out.
Yeah, well, right. But the it takes a while for these things to get up and gone and out and reviewed and all that stuff. So it's quite an enterprise.
So
one of the things we're trying to figure out how to do is to not make it such an enterprise. Make it spin up and spin down initiatives on that are rather considerable, and it takes a huge toll on the climate community. So we're trying to figure out how to be a little bit more. If it's going to be every 4 years, we got to be a little bit more efficient about it. We actually haven't hit 4 years too often. In fact, I only think we've done it once.
Yeah, that's why it was a little ambiguous, because I don't remember them being every 4 years. There was quite a space of time between the first and the second.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it is.
Anyway,
it's by law. The Global Change Act of 1990 is the one that covers and requires this report to the nation. But we haven't hit that mark too often.
Yeah. Well, that's what Emily will be sort of encouraging us to be involved in. So that's good.
Absolutely.
Yep. Excellent. Something else.
The question about Marx, I haven't read the whole thing yet. I mean, I'm very familiar with his thinking on this. And as you're right, Scott, a lot of us have been contributing to this quite a bit, this idea of this ecosystem learning space, but, called different things in different ways. But this idea of the role of education in helping us figure out how to build the capacity and the support and the ongoing initiatives to actually address climate risks and the opportunities to decarbonize the global economy in a short period of time is a really important question that I think we all should challenge ourselves to do a better job of answering. You know, why education when you're talking about this stuff? And I think it's on us to contribute the intellectual process to and documenting it and sharing it. Because it's a hard one.
Yeah. Well, I know we've had, certainly you and I have had this discussion, do we have enough time to take that long view that education has? But I think where we both come down is that the whole workforce development notion is critical to this. It's fine to have all these other plans to do certain things, but if we don't have people who can actually implement them to do the plumbing or, put up the solar cells or whatever, it falls down in the implementation. And so there's a huge role here for workforce development and obviously education backing that up. So,
Scott, I'm with you, but I would challenge us. And I think there are opportunities where education is powerful in the immediate, while it's also you get a double benefit in the long term, because you get the long, and we've been not preparing, communities and citizens for the space that we're in. These are really big, challenging issues that we find ourselves in. But at the same time, there's immediate stuff. I think, the work we did in Paris on the climate youth engagement work really powerfully talked about the now aspect of education while you're also getting the broader, longer investments simultaneously. And that's most people discredit the value of education in the immediate because this is such an immediate thing. Why would you want to make long-range investments? And I think that's a misconception we have to eliminate. Did that stir anybody?
Yeah, I'm mulling right now. So give me that's what I do. I mull. give me some example. I'm having a hard time with the clearly explaining the, when I think about the now part of it, I see youth in sort of unfairly being used as, the token inspiration piece, I think a lot of people, when they talk about, the now value of, young people in the climate change education space is their voice, but it's like using it, it's not it's not as deeply getting into the education part. And I see the intergenerational aspect of youth learning at school and bringing it home and bringing that, maybe that's elevating things. But what are some other really good examples? How do we clearly explain that part? I mean, it's hard with the education piece just as an example, you know, we're writing this as along with the rest of the world in our space, writing this the NOAA grant right now. And I really wanted to do a K-12. I wanted to write a K-12 project funding, and I just have a really hard time figuring out the whole, and that's because the focus is resilience. And it's, like, so hard to even get to. Resilience is, like, a step three, I feel like, and schools aren't at the step one,
mm-hmm.
whereas the public space was, I mean, a no-brainer. I was like, well, this is clearly scaling up the work we're doing in a public education space, but I really wanted it to be in that K-12 space. You know, that's where I wanted to write that project grant, but I couldn't clearly clarify it. And I had a really long discussion with, not to call it, with Rachel at WGBH around the same issue, is how do we describe that part, you know? So.
You know, Kristen, there's a clean talk that happened a long time ago with a professor in New York City in the design school that I'm remembering. And one of the things they were talking about there is, you know, we didn't design climate change. It wasn't an intentional act. We didn't hope for this to happen and then do all this work to make it occur. And one of the things I think is a real challenge and an opportunity simultaneously is the intentional design of human systems in a changing climate with a decarbonizing economy simultaneously, worldwide, right? I mean, that's kind of a challenge mm-hmm. we're in. And if we don't design our way out with intentionality, then we're just going to be fumbling through the same systems we've been struggling with forever. And so there's the immediate is like setting, it's kind of like when people said, what happened in Paris? And I said, it's an inflection. It's a change in the course of humanity. That's kind of a powerful thing to say, but I think that's actually true. You were there. And I think, you know, but that change in direction, intentional change, it takes a while for things to occur. And so if you let the immediate always, you're chasing your tail around. And I think that we have to be much more purposeful. And I think that the other piece of that, why youth, is that, and you said it, the intergenerational space, really involving youth in that space keeps the focus on the longer range in a way that's powerful. I think we've all seen this, but I don't think we're as intentional in using that's the wrong word, but intergenerational planning is a space that is very important, because it's not the now, but it's everyone's in the long range simultaneously, and they see the purpose, and the youth are getting engaged, and they're getting, you know, a voice simultaneously. I don't know, that's a lot of rambling. Maybe I should mull more.
We've maybe been mulling too long.
Yeah, that's funny, Scott. Kristen, does that any of that make sense to you?
Oh no, it totally makes sense, but it still isn't giving me like the immediate reward of the education piece. I mean, I guess I see it. It's maybe not as big. Maybe I'm building it up more in my head and into being something else. But I mean, I do what you said about that intentional change in the course of humanity. I mean, I've heard a lot of people talking just about, well, I've had these conversations talking about what that Paris Agreement did was create this space for change to happen, which I really like that idea. Which in some ways is just like next generation science standards have created this space for climate change to occur in the classroom, you know, the permission. It gives permission for things, more for things to happen, you know. And I like that idea, which is a change in the course, but it's the space to do it in also, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's another piece of this conversation that I think gets to Mark's thinking and the idea of the ecosystem is the work that Jen Crestor was leading with the Wild Center on the youth climate summits, because there was something in the informal space that was powerful, that the formal was necessary but not sufficient.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that the informal space, when used effectively in this way, gives a more complete experience for youth than the K-12, which is foundational. Same kid, different space, a different part of their learning process. And, you know, some of that stuff was really transformational for those kids. So, you know, there's something else there.
Yeah, I mean, I think in that space it's almost always transformational. And that is, I mean, when we broaden it to that, absolutely. And I'm glad, actually, I think Karen already prodded Mark on that, Karen Holick. So what about the informal, which she's good at? Because that should be in his, should be in the plan, too.
Right. Well, the diagram is incomplete. Mm-hmm. It's just one illustration, but there's a richer model that we still have to co-generate.
Yeah, great. Yeah. I'm a big fan of diagrams, but I'm also wondering, you know, how effective are diagrams like the one in Mark's piece and you know, expanding education, you know, make clear that it's you know, it's lifelong and life wide, as folks here talk about it. Can those diagrams keep? Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, are the visual thinkers the ones that we need to reach that will look at a diagram like that and say, oh, now I get it, and now I have a sense of what I need to do? I don't know if you're getting at understand what I'm getting at is do we spend a lot of time on the diagrams? Are those really effective tools to get this idea out? Is it, you know, a nice summary of a very specific kind of thing, something that people say, oh, yeah, duh. Or are we better off in activities and having the summits in writing papers? You know, where should our energy be placed?
That's
a rambling question if there ever was one.
Hi, this is Lynn. I'll jump in. I think that obviously we need to wake people up, that there is this incredible, massive slumber about the issue in the general public, and that what the great thing is, and I really appreciate this group for this, is that there are so many different organizations coming at the issue from so many different perspectives. And I think it's very valuable to target peer groups, because when you target a peer group, you immediately have a cluster of people who can support each other as they learn and as they determine what they want to do about the issue. And now the problem is, what is the entry point to the peer groups? It could be faith-based groups. It could be teacher education groups or environmentalists. That would be a great peer group. Do you all know if any such organization exists? Environmental K through 12 teachers?
Well, National Science Teachers. I mean, there's a lot of groups that we work with. The Next Generation Science Standards, as we were just sort of hinting at,
right,
an enormous space for talking about climate change, which was never really there in the K-12 curriculum. In fact, not much of a place for geosciences, never mind climate. So part of that is, you know, teachers who are engaged in the implementation of the next generation science standards certainly are engaged in doing climate education, maybe not explicitly, but implicitly. If that implementation is going ahead, they will be required to include those kinds of elements. So it's not as if like there's a group, as I can't think of a group that's just around climate change.
Or environmental.
Yes, well, that's the National Association for Environmental Education. You heard Kristen mentioned Karen Halvig. She's a pastor of that organization. So we have quite a bit of engagement with that. That probably is the group that is most closely aligned with that. And if you look at their material, they really are environmental educators and go beyond climate, very broad-based. And very practically oriented too, which is one of the hallmarks of their work. So, that's of all the groups, that's probably the one that's closest to what I think you're hinting at. So it's the National Association for Environmental Education, NAACP.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Frank or Kristen, can you think of any other groups that are that are really teachers in formal education? That is mostly around climate stuff. I mean, we certainly are playing that role. We're a little bit one step away from actually being in the classroom.
For working, say it one more time, specifically working with environmental, like a national organization working with in the environmental space?
Yeah, well, I
think
Lynn,
environmental or
whether it's specifically climate change, but I think the best way of thinking of it is the broader environmental, and I think NAAEE is probably the best organization doing that work, other than the broad, national science teachers kind of stuff, and they both national and state ones.
Right. I mean, it's like them, and then there's ASTEC, which is more in science technology centers, and then there's AZA, which is more zoos and aquariums.
Yep.
And then NAI, which is more interpretation, National Association for Interpretation. So that's parks employees.
Yep.
But then there's some other kind of parallel organizations that are working with those associations, like the NOCI initiative with the AZA community. Which is NNOCCI, which is out of New England Aquarium and a consortium of other, they're doing really fine work specifically on climate change education on the informal, interpretive side. But then there's also Earth to Sky, which is a collaboration between NASA, NOAA, Park Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, doing similar work, and they're they work between NOCI and Earth to Sky, but really trying to explore that space. And I think also another important aspect of that is the leadership that National Park Service have been doing on this, on their interpretive education training. It was part of the White House Climate Education Literacy Initiative to really commit the national park system to educating on climate change. And, these are all complementary, related, interchangeable spaces. And then I guess one other thing is the Institute at the Golden Gate has been doing a lot of work on a collective impact collaborative on climate change education, specifically focused on the national parks, the informal. And, that's another piece of that puzzle.
And Climate Stewards, they've been doing good stuff
absolutely.
For a long time. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the NOAA Climate Stewards program.
Yep. Well, there's certainly a number of programs that are engaged in this. I'm just looking at your website, and I'm sure this doesn't appear to be a list that you have on your website.
Which list is that?
Yeah. So I'm just looking at your resources list, and you know, their advocacy business, but actually not seeing education here.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm driving my husband to a meeting, so I can't write anything down. I will listen to this. If anybody wants to write all these organizations down and send them out to everybody, that could be useful, but I will definitely listen to this again when I'm able to write down these organizations.
That sounds good, Lynn. I don't want keep focus on your driving. but yeah, what you're suggesting is something that, you know, we kind of do because, you know, Frank and I have been doing this for a while. You know, this is stuff that we kind of know in the background, but we actually have never really written a lot of this stuff down.
I hear you.
It might be on climate.gov, but I don't think so. It's probably something that we should put up on the CLEAN website, too. It's just this, you know, the organizations that have developed over the last couple of years that really are working, especially in the informal education area. Some of these are relatively new organizations that have, you know, developed out of federal funding and such.
So, you know, Scott, one of the things that we've talked about a couple times in the community is the, you know, the CLEAN collection looks at resources, but there is a gap in our community where we haven't done an exhaustive kind of look at the major programs or the major initiatives and given some kind of structural, you know, like if you want to look at informal, if you want to look at geographic, if you want to look at audience, you know, if you want to look at, you know, federal and non-federal, it's, but there's a lot of initiative out there that is left uncoordinated. And so people come in and they really have to relearn this history and the organizational diversity every time. And that seems to be a missing initiative, but I mean, as a pro bono network, that's a tall order.
Yes,
I couldn't agree more. This is Lynn. I couldn't agree more. And 2 weeks ago, there was a discussion about the, there was an organization in California that was discussed as a great model to be utilized with other cities. And I think it would be enormously helpful to have some kind of a roster of organizations. I'd be glad to help to put it together, but I don't know the organization. I just have to work with other people on that.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be helpful.
Well, yep. Let's email each other.
Yeah, but it's you know, the one of the, it's not a lot of work, actually. If you ask the over 500 people in the network, you know, nominate, you know, your top programs in these areas and put it in the Google form and something like that, we probably would get a lot of rich information very quickly. Go ahead.
Yeah.
If I send out an email to the whole organization suggesting that, you know, this came out of our talk today, asking for a brief paragraph description of these organizations and to send them to me. I mean, this is what I've been doing with my website since July. I've been collecting, and building the information and putting it together, so I'm happy to do more of it. And I think it's critical.
Let's do that.
I would just ask maybe one thing to do is to think about how would you want to collect that information in a consistent way, you know, so that you once we've kind of said, well, here's the kind of key information. It's kind of what we did with the youth engagement, the climate youth engagement data call. You know, just what's the five things you would want to know about any one organization? And you know, and then all of us could just simply provide that five bits of information about all these programs and initiatives, and they would probably be consistent and interchangeable.
Would you all think about what five things are the most important and put those in an email to me. I emailed my website out today, so everybody has my email address. This is Lynn. And figure out what those five top things we want to know about the organizations are. That would be really helpful.
That's easy.
Sure.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, it's federal, nonprofit, or profit, audience.
Yep.
Website. Focus or scope.
You know, what I'm thinking about is the trace catalog that we did with NASA, NOAA, and NSF. You know, target audience, grade level, funder, region, product type, or something like that. You know, active or inactive. Yeah.
Yeah, the tri-agency one. And that's probably one that you're not familiar with, Lynn, and I'll send you an email about that one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I look at things from a complete non-governmental perspective. Yeah. And a lot of you are involved, obviously, with agencies. So I'd like to see a blend of the two and, clarifying those in among the five items. But,
yep.
Yeah, okay.
Good. That's good.
Great.
Well, and that's something that we can put together. And, Frank, that's a great suggestion is trying to use the same categories that are in TRACE. And there's the five. So I would add website on there, too, name and website, but product type, target audience, grade level, funder, and where it's located, where it's focused.
Good.
Yeah. Obviously, you'd want a point of contact.
Yes, exactly, in the website. So we're going to get
five is arbitrary. It might be seven.
Well, mm-hmm. I'm thinking that we need to know what their primary activity is, whether it's education or lobbying or developing education materials. You know, just I think we need to know that too.
Yeah. And that's part of what this list would provide. So we are certainly TRACE and CLEAN itself is mostly focused on education. We're pretty careful about how far we go with advocacy because of our funding requirements.
Of course.
Yeah. And that's but we're totally open to folks who do that work. There's no question about that. We're just some of us are a little careful about how much we can do, at least in when we're wearing certain hats.
Yes.
Good. So, any other comments or so? Since we've now got homework. I'm curious what we're hearing in the background, but whatever.
What was that?
Oh, I'm just curious what sound we're hearing in the background. Who's not muted while we're hearing? Is that you?
Oh, it might be me. It's probably me. We don't have an office right now. It's under construction, so I work from all corners of the Twin Cities metro area.
Okay, that's what it is.
I'm in the lobby. I'm in the lobby of our building right now.
Oh, that's what we're getting periodically.
Yeah, I apologize.
Not a problem. It's knowing what's happening is half the battle. So any other comments or questions for today? We can go and do our homework for a little bit and maybe we even report back next week around this. I think it's just simply putting together a bit of a catalog like this I think would be quite useful for picking our own brains about it. And then we'll figure out what's the best way to present that, whether this is something that, Lynn, you want to put up on your website or whether it's something that we do on CLEAN or some of the other
websites. All the above.
Yeah, exactly, all the above. That's kind of where I go to. Good. So we can talk about that next week. Next week is also an informal discussion. And unless something comes up, but I think we're it's going to be an informal discussion next week. Nothing's planned at this point, and that would be great. Anything else? I don't want to sort of railroad us off of here. I'm just thinking that we're kind of come to an end. Are we good?
Yep.
Okay. There is that. Thank you, everyone, and we'll reconvene next week at 1 p.m. Eastern.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Right, bye.
Bye.
Now.